And while you're taking your seats, I want you to picture being a child. Remember back a little way, some further than others. Picture being a child and sharing the back seat of a car with your brothers and sisters. If you can't picture that far back, perhaps you can recall your own children sharing the back seat of a car on a road trip. Now, I had two younger brothers. They are 5 years apart either way. So basically, when we were quite young, it was annoying because they were annoying. And then as we got older, I want to tell you that we got more mature and bigger, and we became bigger and better people. But honestly, it got worse. By the time we were all teenagers or early young adults, going on a road trip all in the same car was my worst nightmare. Now, I have to say, I think it is much worse when you have brothers than sisters. I'm just putting that out there. But frequently, so there would be prodding and poking and pinching and probably kicking and some other words which we won't say here. And one of my parents would inevitably turn around, probably only 20 minutes into a, 10-hour car trip, and say, "Why can't you all just get along?" Does that ever happen in anyone else's house? Yeah, a few nods out there. "Why can't you all just get along?" As if it was that easy. And our passage from Scripture today, the topic that we are looking at, is James asking us, "Why can't you all just get along?" This passage warns us about the dangers of disunity inside the church. What it looks like when we fight with fellow believers, when we bring other people in our faith communities down. And I have to say, it's not a very pretty picture that James paints for the church. It would seem that the community of James chapter 4 was in conflict, and James is addressing some pretty serious stuff that is going on. He says, "What causes fights and quarrels among you?" What causes fights and quarrels among you? Or perhaps, as we might say, why are you always living in conflict with one another? Why can't you all just get along? I'm not sure whether to be disappointed or encouraged by this question that James asks, because part of me feels relieved. I feel relieved that all those years ago in the early church that quarrels and fights existed amongst the people of God. But then also I feel kind of disappointed that here we are thousands of years later and still people within the church can't get along with one another. The issue still remains. So it can be a little disappointing. And you know what? It's a tough topic to talk about disunity amongst our people. Over the last few weeks, we've looked at different things, and it's been quite outward looking. You know, of course we should treat the widow and the orphan and the poor and the marginalized well. But what about the people inside our four walls here? Now, I don't necessarily think, for most of us, that we set out to start wars. I'm not sure about anyone else, but I do not wake up in the morning and think to myself, "I can't wait to have some conflict this morning." And if you do think that, I'm interested to have a conversation with you, because I think that's kind of hilarious. But I don't generally get up and think I want to be in conflict with someone today. Conflict comes about, as James warns us, not because we necessarily set out to fight with one another, but because we want our own ways. Fights, quarrels, conflicts, as James puts them, they all come from selfish desires. They arose from people in the early church because they failed to live in submission to the Father's will. They allowed their selfish desire, what they wanted, their need to be right or to prove someone else wrong, the desire to live a proud, self-sufficient life rather than a life of true submission. So as we take a look at this scripture today, I want us to consider a very well-known moment in the Psalms, where David says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." And I wonder this morning if you might take on that mindset as we look at some of these things, some of these issues that sometimes arise in the faith community and what they can do to us, that you might pray that prayer, search me, O God, and know my inner thoughts, know what's in my heart, and help me to see forward into the future. See, once again, as we've seen across this entire series in James, if you've been following along, is that the point always comes back to the individual and their relationship with Jesus. Getting along within the walls of our church, it begins with me. It begins with you. When people are living in submission to God's will for their life, that's when we truly start to see the church united. But James warns, and this passage has this great warning in there, that there is a consequence for us if we can't get this right. He takes a pretty harsh tone when he describes what happens, because he's trying to convey what happens when hostility or resentment or hatred come between his people. Because ultimately, if we can't get along with one another, it's God's reputation that is on the line. In the Message paraphrase, James 4:11 is put a little differently. It says it's God's word, his message, his royal rule that take a beating with that kind of talk. Remember the royal rule that we talked about just a few weeks ago on Father's Day? Clayton told us about this royal rule of loving God and loving others. That message that we put out to the world, it takes a hit if we are not unified with one another. Something that I truly love as an avid follower of sports is the Olympics. Anyone else a fan of the Olympics? Yes, coming up again next year in Paris. And I love watching the opening ceremony. I love the opening ceremony because the athletes are there, they're excited, they're representing their country in their cute little matching outfits, which are always very interesting. But you, as you see these countries come out, particularly Australia, I noticed in the last Olympics, they're taking selfies with one another, they've got arms around one another, they're laughing, they're sort of projecting this image to the world that we play all these different sports, we're all these different people, but we are here united and we are here in it together. And I love that image that is portrayed to the rest of the world. We're excited to be here. Imagine what it would look like if team walked out, heads down, not interacting with one another, sort of whatever, we're here but we're not really excited about it. You'd be like, what's going on? Glad I'm not part of that country. They're not very excited. They don't like each other. They don't want to be here. And just a few weeks ago, I was part of a moment where I saw something like this happen. Now, I know I promised a few weeks ago that I'd stop talking about the FIFA Women's World Cup, but I lied because I'm going to talk about it again today. See, I was had the privilege of going to the grand final of the World Cup versus Spain and England. And Spain won. So the end, the buzzer, the whistle blows at the end. And it was a really odd scene. And I remember saying to my friend who I was with, this is weird, right? What's happening? See, if you had watched Australia any time they had won a game, you would see players and coaching staff and all their people run onto the pitch, and there would be this huge big huddle, everyone in, applauding one another, congratulating one another. But this is what happened at the end of the Spain game. It's going to come up on the screen. It's not great footage. So you see a pile of people over there, come up on the screen. So what the screen is showing you is the Spanish players. But what you would have seen when it first panned across was all the Spanish officials, coaching staff, medical team. They were in two separate huddles of celebration. And in the stadium, in the atmosphere, when the crowd is going crazy, it just was a little odd. It said to the world, we are not united. We are not together on this. We cannot get along. Now, this was before the presentation and the kiss and all the controversy in the media, which we don't even need to talk about. But clearly, in this moment, what happened? It showed to the world what was going on under the surface. Their actions, the way that they didn't get along, it came out and it becomes very evident very quickly. When disunity is present, it shows. And it's kind of awkward. You're on the same team, but yet you're not united. And you know, I think this is similar for us as the church. How we present to the world actually matters. It reflects what is going on inside of the church. We represent the family of God, and we should be giving the impression to everyone watching from the outside that we get along, that we encourage one another, that we're excited to be here, and that we are united. Actually, we shouldn't just be giving the impression that we are all those things. We should actually be those things. It's God's reputation that is on the line. And you know, if we can't speak well of each other, what does that say to people who don't yet feel part of a faith community? Sometimes we do get caught up on petty, minor issues, and it challenges our ability to share God's message to the world. No surprises that not all a fan of Christians who argue on Facebook can be damaging, can't it? People from the outside looking in, and these people can't even agree with one another. They can't even be nice to one another. It causes problems if we are not united. And you know, you might be thinking, well, this is all well and good, but actually, Sarah, I do love other people. I love God. I am not a conflict person. I get along with people. I don't have too many problems promoting unity, actually. But you know, some scholars that I was reading this week have said that actually probably James's congregation felt like that. For the most part, they would have been getting along. They would have been encouraging one another. But there was a small minority in the congregation that were causing these issues, this fighting and this quarrelling amongst them. And this is what the scholar says about that. It says, such an influential minority was caught up in this devastation that it was corrupting the whole body. Too many were being swallowed up as a result of wars between groups and quarrels among individuals. See, it's quite easy for us to read that and think, yes, I'm not part of the minority. They're stuffing it up for the rest of us. Why can't you all get along? But actually, if the inability to get along is affecting a small minority in any church, it will eventually affect the large majority. So we must be cautious that we're not caught up in that small majority of people. We each have a small role to play, because while there are conflicts and issues and quarrels, it eventually affects the whole community. It affects the culture. It affects the way that we speak to one another. I wonder if you've ever heard of the brownie illustration. Have you heard the story about the brownies before? It's okay, I'm going to tell it. So basically, when we're talking about a small thing affecting a large whole, this is a great story. A mum was talking to her son one day as she was cooking dinner, and the son says, well, Mum, I would like to go and see this movie. Mum says, oh, well, I've actually heard that there's quite a bit of swearing, a bit of explicit content in the movie, so I'm not sure if that's a good idea. So the son goes and looks it up and says, no, look, Mum, it's really okay. There's just a little bit of swearing, just a little bit of explicit content, and the rest, it's great. It's brilliant cinematography. And the mum says, well, you know what, I'll talk to your father about it and we'll decide. A couple of hours later, mum is standing there making brownies for dessert and says, son, can you come and help me? And the son comes in and says, sure, trying to make a good impression so he can go to the movie. She says, oh, would you just go outside and scoop me up a bit of dog poo? Takes a teaspoon, puts a little teaspoon of dog poo in the brownie mix, continues on, bakes the brownies, lays them out on the table, all while the gobsmacked teenager stands there, says, Mum, what have you done? She says, well, It's just a little bit of poop. Shouldn't ruin the whole brownie. No one's coming to my house for brownies now. Now, often we use this story to talk about holiness or purity, you know, a little bit affects the whole. But I think the same thing can be applied in the church. When there is a small minority of people that are not united, that do not get along, James is kind of saying it affects everything that we do. So I want to tell you really briefly just the two things that James says that we can be aware of to help us not even to get to that place of disunity. And the first one is this. James says, getting along takes knowing the internal battle. In classic James style, he answers the first question with another question. He says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from the desires that battle within you? See, he wants us to recognize that the battle always starts with us. Most of the time, the cause of fights, of quarrels, is our own selfish desires. Our need for validation or our need to be right about something, our need to protect ourselves or to make ourselves seem better than we are. And James is saying, you're all human. You have to understand that these battles, these desires are real. They exist in our world. That's why there are fights and quarrels and wars, because people can't get along. You know, when I was younger, I used to probably quite often argue with my dad. And when I would argue with my dad and maybe my attitude was overtaking as a teenager, he would quite often say to me when we were finished arguing, he would send me to my room and say, Sarah, you need to go and take a good, hard look at yourself. I didn't know what that meant when I was 14. Sit in front of the mirror and look at my own face. I don't know. I thought it was an odd thing to say. And it wasn't till I got a little older that I realized that he was saying you need to have an internal look, not a look in the mirror, but have a look at your attitudes, your selfish desires. How have we got into this fight in the first place? To have some time in self-reflection. And it's hard to do that, isn't it? It's hard to take a look at ourselves, to open up, like David says in the Psalms, to allow God to identify anything within us that causes disunity. The other thing we need to realize when we talk about the internal battle is this war that we are fighting is not with each other, or at least it shouldn't be. In Ephesians 6:12, when we talk about putting on the full armour of God to protect us, we see that the war isn't against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual forces of evil. There's a spiritual battle that we are a part of, and we've got to see the bigger picture. We haven't been placed here to fight against each other. We've been placed here to fight together. Our vision statement says, wherever there is hardship or injustice, salvos will live, love and fight. But we're not fighting with each other. We have to see the bigger picture that actually collectively we are called as the church to go and fight real issues, to advocate for the oppressed, to serve those in need, to make sure that everyone receives the gospel message. Knowing the internal battle isn't about removing the struggle or our selfish desires. It's about being aware of it. It's about recognizing that we're human, and it's easy to allow our selfish desires to take over. The second thing that James says, and this is a common theme throughout this book and this series, he says that getting along takes submitting to God. After he has quite bluntly laid out what our selfish desires turn into, he says from verse 7, submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve and mourn and wail. Change your laughter to mourning, your joy to gloom. Humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up. The Message paraphrase puts it a little differently. It says, let God work his will in you. Yell a loud no to the devil and watch him make himself scarce. Say a quiet yes to God and he'll be there in no time. Quit doubling in sin, purify your inner life, quit playing the field, hit bottom and cry your eyes out. The fun and games are over. Get serious, really serious. Get down on your knees before the Master. It's the only way you'll get on your feet. James is saying we need to submit ourselves to God so that we can be true people of unity. And in verse 11 and 12, when he talks about the damaging effects of speaking ill of people in our church community, he uses the word adelphos, which is a Greek word that really just means brother or sister. But I love in this definition that kind of unpacks it a little here. It says, any fellow man and fellow believer united to another by the bond of affection. I like those words, the bond of affection. Recognizing that we are all brothers and sisters, children of God. We are united by the bond of affection. People might be different to us, but when they are part of this community, we become family. And James doesn't say, well, you're all just broken sinners, and that's the way that you should remain. He encourages us to be better, to allow Christ's love to transform us in how we interact with people. I was reading as I prepared for this from an old book that many of you will be familiar with, many of you who were perhaps encouraged to read this before you became senior soldiers in the Salvation Army. Many of you have probably read Chosen to be a Soldier at some time or another. And this book, I would encourage you to read it if you haven't before, but it does talk about our doctrines and what we believe, what our covenant is as we become soldiers in the Salvation Army. And this is what it has to say about the way that we treat one another. It says, such a loving relationship between fellow soldiers is not ruled out by differences of taste and temperament or varying options and habits, but it does mean a sincere appreciation of each other's worth and a heartfelt wish to be of blessing, help, and encouragement to each other. Kindness, courtesy, and practical assistance is given gladly and without stint. Fellow soldiers whose relationship is one of Christian love will pray for each other, thank God for each other, and speak well of each other. A sincere appreciation of each other's worth. That is what we are called to do here. We are called to be people that love one another and who are united. Ephesians 4:14 to 16 says, then we will no longer be infants tossed back and forth by the waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching, by the cunning and craftiness of people and their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is head, that is Christ. From him, the whole body joined and held together, every supporting ligament grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. And you know, this passage comes from a passage titled Unity and Maturity in the Body of Christ. See, unity coincides with maturity. And last week, Michelle told us that the taming of the tongue is the truest sign of maturity. And there's this common theme throughout the book of James that we just need to grow up. We just need to get along. We need to be united. We just need to grow up a little bit, become mature in our faith. Our inability to get along, James warns, has big consequences for our church. It affects how people view us. It affects how we view one another. And ultimately, it prevents us from being all that we can be. And you know, this has been an issue for so many years that I don't believe God is sitting there saying, if you can't get along with each other, I'm not going to work. Because we've seen him work in and through and despite each one of us and many people who have come before us. But how we treat people matters. And I believe that we will never be truly as effective as we can be if we can't get along with one another. So this morning, we're going to sing beautiful words of love divine. And we're going to sing these words and let them wash over us. But I would encourage you this morning to ask God to identify within you, to ask yourself, am I living in complete submission to God's will? Ask Him to identify barriers to unity that might exist in your own heart, in your own life. Maybe it's past things that stop you from moving forward. Maybe it's the need to be right or to seek revenge. Ask God to soften that part of your heart. If loving each other is a priority, and I hope that it is, then hopefully everything else should flow from that. If we love each other, we don't bring each other down. If we love each other, we don't manipulate, we don't fight, we don't speak poorly against one another. If we can't get this right, how do we expect that a broken, hurting world are going to come to know Jesus? Instead, we want to be the light. We want to be attractive to all because of the way that we love one another.